Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm a mentor, four times author, leader of my Bold Darling Mastermind for female entrepreneurs, retreat host, and I've gotten to host this podcast for 5 years. As with all of my work, this show is to serve female entrepreneurs who want to optimize their energy and their mindsets in order to build the businesses and lives of their dreams. I've walked this entrepreneurial path for 11 years now, and I can tell you that there is a way to have a business you love and still have the space and time for all the other parts of your life that make you, you. Whether your number one priority right now is to scale your business, upgrade your finances, rediscover yourself, find more energy, get more organized, reconnect with yourself, or build a life and or business that's more aligned for you, or all of the above, I am here as your guide on the show to help you make it a reality. Listen in on my dulcet Irish tones as I share tales from the front line of my business and mentoring, behind the scenes insights on how I'm approaching life and business, and speak with brilliant expert guests. Search The Lorraine Murphy Show wherever you get your podcasts. A new episode drops every Friday. Subscribe to make sure you always catch the freshest episodes. Let's dive in to this week's show. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. It is so good, as always, to have you joining me. Thank you. So this week's episode is entrepreneurial focused. And if you are an entrepreneur, you need to come to my Bold Breakthrough. So this is a free 1 hour training that I'm hosting in a couple of weeks. And based on the fact that I have mentored thousands of female entrepreneurs at this point, I have really been able to identify what the most common blocks are for those self-same entrepreneurs. And in the Bold Breakthrough, I am going to be stepping through those blocks. I'll be talking about sales, marketing, systems, support, and the one that so many coaches miss, energy management. In the training, I will be sharing the number one lever you can use immediately to unlock more sales, the simple framework to identify your own personal content sweet spot, how to break systemizing down from a mountain to a molehill. I don't think there's any area that people get as overwhelmed about as they do around systemization. I'm really excited to address that breakthrough. I also shared the model that I use to build and optimize my energy and resilience. And you know, if you listen to the show for a while, I am so passionate about women, particularly nourishing their own energy in order to go and grow the businesses of their dreams. And I'm also going to be sharing how to know what to outsource. So I'm really, really excited to host this training. There are 3 different options available, so you have the best chance of finding a spot that suits you as humanly possible. And in order to save your seat, you can go to lorrainemurphy.com.au/TBB, the Bold Breakthrough, TBB. So would love to have you joining me on that. Okay, so this week I want to talk about 3 skills that every entrepreneur should be working on in order to grow their businesses. But based on a lot of the mentees that I have the joy of working with, they're probably not focusing on these. So I think we talk a lot in business circles around, you know, the hard skills like sales and marketing and operations and admin and funnels and all the things. Like, we really talk a lot about, yeah, those kind of really solid, I want to say, like, inverted commas, like, traditional business skills, and there is 100% a place for them. So within my Bold Darling Mastermind, for example, we very much dedicate a month, a year, if not more, to each of those different areas. However, what is also so incredibly important are the soft skills that can often get overlooked. And I'm going to say this outright in this episode. Some of these skills are more fitting in the realm of, I guess, feminine superpowers. And I wonder sometimes if we are so used to operating in what I would call a more patriarchal business environment, if these softer skills are overlooked as a result of that. And they are definitely of equal importance, if not even more importance, than the more, as I said, traditional, inverted commas, hard skills that we often talk about in business circles. So I want to celebrate three of these soft skills today, and I also want to hopefully give you a little nudge in their direction if you feel like you could do with focusing on one or more of these areas a little bit more in your life and your business. Give them some more love so that they can help and support you and guide you in your business more and more. So there's three of these softer skills that I want to touch on today. And the first is intuition. So I remember when I was in the very early days of building my first business, and I read an article online from the Harvard Business Review. And the writer was saying that in business of the future, so I'm talking way back in the dark ages of 2012, so 12 whole years ago, that there were a couple of things that were going to be required more and more. They said that given that the pace of business was picking up so much year on year, and this is back in 2012, I mean, oh my gosh, how much faster is it going than we even expected it to go? So given how fast paced the business environment was becoming at that point, and has clearly become and will go on to become even more fast paced with the boon of AI and so on, that in order to navigate that, business owners were going to need meditation in order to, yeah, to be able to cope and thrive with the pace of the business environment going as fast as it was and now is. The other area that the author mentioned was intuition. So again, this is quite related to their first point, that given that business is oscillating at a faster and faster pace, that decisions need to be made faster and faster. And very often, the pace is going so fast that the data can't quite catch up. Like, we can't quite get the full intel, the full pros and cons list going. We need to make a decision based on our intuition. And you've all had that experience. You know, when you're sitting in a meeting, a client asks a thorny question, and you need to think on your feet, and you need to give an intuitive response rather than saying, hey, I'm just going to go back and look back over the last 6 months of reports and come back to you with some recommendations. Like, sometimes you need to have an answer in the moment. And very often we need to lean on our intuition in order to do that. So I thought that Harvard Business Review piece was really, really interesting. So much so that I immediately went and signed up for a course in honing your intuition. And oh my God, it was like the worst whole course that I've ever been. I used to drive over to North Sydney on a Monday evening after doing a massive day in my growing business, my startup. And I would sit and listen to this teacher, and how she was training was that she would print out all her notes, like A4 printed paper, and then read through the notes word by word. That was her way of training. And after, I think, 3 or 4 weeks, I just said, oh my God, this is just killing me. This is dulling down my intuition. It's so painful. So I followed my intuition and I stopped attending my intuition course and sought guidance elsewhere. So when we think about intuition, if I refer back to one of my favorite books of all time, which is Beyond Mars and Venus by John Gray. And in the book, John Gray talks about the different aspects of feminine energy and also masculine energy. And something he talks about as being one of the female superpowers is a very natural, organic, authentic sense of intuition. And I've had so many experiences with Wade and I having conversations where I will make an observation. He said, why are you saying that? I say, I just have an intuitive nudge. I just have a feeling that this is what's going on. And lo and behold, time passes and he comes back and says, you know that thing you said? You were actually bang on with that. How did you know? So it really is one of our superpowers. And I think it's one of the elements that I feel, not so much now because I think we're a lot more conscious of women in business, but I definitely in the early days of building my first business, I feel like we almost said there was an expectation for us to act in a more male way, you know, us female entrepreneurs. And I think that kind of comes with it, with parking natural, as I said, female superpowers like our intuition and leaning on our intuition. And over the years, I've really come to trust more and more in my intuition, and I've guided my mentees to do the same. And there's lots of ways to hone our intuition. So definitely don't go to a course in North Sydney on a Monday night, because that was shocking. I've had the brilliant psychic Helen Jacobs on the show a couple of times now. And one of the episodes we talked about how to hone your intuition. And some of the tools that she talks about is definitely meditation, but being quite open to whatever your own interpretation of meditation is. So maybe it is Vedic meditation, which I love to practice. Or maybe it's just having a shower and not having music playing, or it's going for a walk in nature and not listening to a podcast, just creating that space for our intuition to actually communicate to us. When Helen and I have chatted about this space in the past, she said, you know, often our intuition is almost screaming in our ears, but we are so busy and consumed with tech and constantly being on that we just don't have the capacity to actually listen to what our intuition is trying to tell us. So maybe it's meditation, and maybe it's just creating those pockets of silence where you can hear yourself and hear your intuition think and communicate to you. Another really beautiful way to access your intuition more is using oracle cards. So I've got 3 different decks that I use quite regularly. And Helen also has her own deck called the Little Sage Oracle Cards as well. So just a really nice way of, it's called a divination tool, where you can actually tune into your intuition and get some guidance. There are so many different ways that you can do this. There's a number of different practices that I practice with. But if you do want to dive deeper into how to hone your intuition, please do refer back to that episode with Helen. I'll link to it in the show notes as well. And also her book, which is called You Already Know, such an awesome title, is specifically written with a view to helping you tap into that innate intuition more and more. And over time, you know, it doesn't need to be quite such an intentional, okay, what's my intuition saying? Let me tune in, okay, let me create some pockets of space. But over time, as you do start to lean on your intuition and trust it and access it more and more, that you will actually be able to ask questions of it without it feeling like such an involved process. Something I've been playing with myself, I was just sharing it in my Bull Darling Mastermind Masterclass yesterday, is thinking about if I've got a course of action, okay, so maybe it's hiring someone or not hiring someone, or it's launching a particular product or retiring another product, or it's even simple things like, what do I want to do next weekend? I like to tune in and just, okay, settle, take a deep breath. Sometimes my hand is on my heart, sometimes it's not. And just say, okay, does this idea, so for example, hiring this person, does this make me feel expansive or does it make me feel contracted? And ideally what I want to feel in my body is that sense of expansion. And I've been using this, I said it out loud to the team recently where we're planning the launch strategy for opening Bold Darling Doors later on this month in March. And we were discussing different ways that we could approach this launch. And Sam, my ops manager, made a suggestion, and I just closed my eyes for a moment on the Zoom and I said, yeah, that makes me feel expansive. I think that's the way to go. Or things like, Wade was going to fly over to Bali the week after my retreat to Bali with the kids, and we were going to have a family holiday the week after. And Sam was, you know, every fortnightly WIP meeting that we have, so team meeting for the non-Aussies, she would say, okay, I'm looking at these Bali flights, these are the dates, these are the times. And I would just look so glazed. And finally, in one of our meetings, she just said, Lorraine, why don't you just do the family holiday in October? It was just too many logistics, having landed back in Sydney, figuring out a house, a car, Lexi in school, daycare, settling back into my business, all the things. And when she said that, I just had this sense of like my whole body just sighing. I was like, ah. And I felt so much more expansive at the idea of having the family holiday in October rather than trying to make it happen, like force it to happen in May. So that might be, even in itself, around tuning more into your intuition, not just in business, but more broadly as well, around asking yourself, when you are presented with some options, does that option make you feel expanded or does it make you feel contracted? And if all of your options are making you feel contracted, well, I think that's a real invitation to go back to the drawing board and think, is there another way that I can approach this particular thing? And I think that's something really important to mention as well. And I talked about this when I hosted my 2-day Bold Brilliance Strategy Retreat. Oh, that sounds like a mouthful. In Sydney recently. And I had a panel with 2 of my 7-figure mentees. And they were so incredibly generous. I briefed them to speak honestly about what it truly takes to build a 7-figure business. They were meant to speak for 50 minutes. I think I had to say, okay, we've got to stop. I need to let you both go home. After about an hour and 30 minutes, like, you could have heard a pin drop in the room. It was really, really incredible. But something that came up in that conversation was the importance of tuning into our intuition, but also remembering that our intuition doesn't live in our heads. And so many of us, men and women alike, spend all day in our heads. We're thinking about facts, figures, evidence, pros and cons list, And that's not the language that our intuition speaks. Our intuition is the language of the heart, the language of the gut. So when we women particularly are so caught up in our heads and in that real... I talk to one of my mentees when she gets into this really masculine, adrenalized energy. I say to her, you're back in your rah-rah-rah energy. So when we're in that rah-rah-rah energy, again, our intuition, well, first of all, it's not even activated because we're so in our heads. And second of all, even if it was mildly activated, we cannot hear it because we're so in our heads. So there's a reason why so many of us have our best ideas and our best intuitive hunches when, for me, it's on the yoga mat. So if I'm doing yoga or Pilates, I swear there's no problem I cannot solve once I'm on my mat and I'm moving and I'm dropping into my body and focusing on my breath and where my arms are and my hands are at, rather than what's happening in my head. And also, I know I talk to mentees and having a shower or going for a swim or going for a walk. One of my friends, Rachel McDonald, she's a brilliant life coach, has a really beautiful practice where she sets herself, there's a problem or something she's trying to figure out, a question that she has of herself. And she asks that question and she sets off on her walk and she ponders it. And she said, without fail, she comes home with an answer to that question. So there's lots of different practices that we can use, but I think so much of it is preempted with us getting back into our body. So Clara Bead, who's the incredible spiritual guide that comes on my Bali retreats with me, talks a lot about the importance of somatic movement and getting back into our bodies in order to access that deeper intuition and have happier bodies as well, of course. So there's some things that intuition has helped me with. As I said, first of all, knowing what products are good to launch. So when I'm creating something, so much of the creative process comes from what I intuitively feel my community needs at any one time. So for example, back in the midst of the dark days of COVID, I would put on these monthly online events as a way of, I guess, creating a bright light. It gave me something to focus on. It was an opportunity for my community to come together. So every month, I think for that whole year, 2020, I did a monthly online event. And how I would decide those events was, what did I feel? Like tuning into the collective consciousness of my community, what did I feel would serve them most in their lives and businesses at any one time? And then the other element then as well is knowing which products that it's time to park. Like they have had their time in the spotlight and they're not necessarily in a position to serve my community how I would want them to. They're not serving me, whether it's energetically or commercially. And just, again, being that idea being sparked by that nudge of, okay, I think it's time to retire that thing. And it also comes down to people to hire. I remember when I hired Sam, my ops manager, I had 6 people I was interviewing. Yes. And Sam was the 6th. And she had applied a bit later than everyone else. And I was like, oh, do I even need to do this last interview? You know, I've already done, you know, 5 hours of interviews or whatever it was. It's quite a lot. And I said, no, just do the last interview. And she popped up on Zoom. And the second her camera switched on and I saw her face, immediately it was like a full body, yes, I want this person in my team. I must ask her if she felt the same. It's pretty awkward if she says no. So tuning into that intuition, as I said, it's one of those skills that is so incredibly overlooked and undervalued, but I'm hoping, and I do think that there is more of a zeitgeist around nurturing our intuition more in order to make better decisions in business. Speaking of decisions, the second skill that I really do believe that every business owner should be focusing on is decisiveness. So life, as you know, requires a lot of decision-making. I'm wondering if there's anything that requires as much decision-making in life as building a house. I've had a number of friends who've renovated, mentees who've renovated, and they all say to me the biggest pain point in the renovation process is the amount of decisions they have to make. And making decisions way before they feel like they need to make those decisions. So choosing appliances a year before there's even a kitchen in place. So life definitely requires a lot of decisions. And if you do have the honor and the joy of starting and running your own business, you will know that there are even more decisions to be made in business. And I really do think that one of the biggest occupational hazards of entrepreneurship is procrastinating on making a decision. For example, not being able to decide whether or not you want to keep a particular person in your team. Maybe they haven't been performing so well, they've had a couple of negative pieces of feedback from clients, you're not especially loving working with them, but you're still holding on to them in the business and delaying making the decision. Maybe it is, like I was talking about in my business, where there's a particular product or a service that is just not performing as well, that you know that if you were to cut it away, that it would give you, just like a tree, you know, if you trim away some dead branches, there's so much more nourishment and energy and water and light to go around to all the trees and the leaves that are flourishing. I was chatting to a friend recently who is running a very, very successful and sexy online business. And she actually made a big decision a couple of years ago to close an entire section of her product offer because it was only bringing in 20% of revenue and actually it was creating 80% of the pain in her business. So you've probably heard me talk about the Pareto principle at points, so that 80-20 rule. She was such a cut and dried example of someone who had a business whereby it was bringing in only 20% of the revenue, but as I said, was consuming 80% of the brain power for her and her team and also the expenses in the business as well. So making a decision like that to cut away that 20% of her business just meant that the remaining 80% could go so much better and her team would throw their full weight behind that. So that's obviously a pretty big decision, even though it was, inverted commas, only 20% of revenue. That's still pretty significant. If you're running $1 million business, that's 200K that you're kissing goodbye to. So it's also got its own inherent risk. And I guess the question then becomes is if you don't make this decision now, how much more difficult could your situation be in a year's time, 5 years time, 10 years time, 20 years time? Really, really powerful question to ask yourself. So procrastinating on making decisions like this around hiring, around products, around strategic moves within your business has a number of negative effects. So the first is that it creates a loss of momentum because every day that you're not making that decision, you're holding yourself back from getting that momentum in other areas of your business. The second huge drawback is the opportunity cost of not making that decision. So the time, the energy, the bandwidth, all the other things that you could be focusing on while you are procrastinating on making this particular decision can stack up to be quite significant. And then the third is the loss of energy and focus. When I am mentoring a mentee one-on-one and a particular team member comes up more than three times in a negative capacity, as in they're not performing, I have to stop them mid-session, mid-sentence sometimes and just say, hey, we need to address this. Particularly with team stuff, if someone in the team is not working out and it is taking up that much of the founder's headspace, that is such a risky place to be. And there's obviously lots of different elements to retaining someone who's not performing in your team because it's toxic for the rest of the team, it lowers standards for the rest of the team, which demotivates the people who are, and you want to continue to be performers. But if they see others getting away with being subpar, well then, kind of stands to reason that's the standard they're going to gradually step down towards or move to another culture whereby performers are rewarded well and recognized and seen for their achievements. So when you do have someone who is taking up that much headspace for the founder, there are 50 million other better things that the founder's energy should be better spent on. For example, sales. For example, strategic direction. For example, building and growing culture. For example, systemizing and streamlining the business. As I said, if I am in a mentoring session and a particular person's name comes up more than two, three times, that's when I have to have that conversation where we say, okay, this is the situation. How can we improve the situation? And if it can't be improved, what are the milestones that we're going to put in place that me and you, hi mentee, can check in on so that this doesn't continue to snowball and become something that we don't have actively on the table that we're discussing and addressing within the business. So that loss of energy and loss of bandwidth is huge. And it's fascinating. I'm going to stick with the underperforming team members for a moment. It's really interesting to me. I've had mentees who have been actually borderline traumatized at the idea of having to let someone go. Maybe they haven't had to do it before, or maybe they have done it before and it was a really negative situation and they definitely do not want to go back and put themselves through that again. But when the job is done and when the conversation has been had and the person has been moved on to their next awesome opportunity in a different business, to be clear, the sense of relief and space, and that word again, expansion, that happens. I have seen hockey stick increases in every mentee who has had someone who's been long time unperforming and is really, as I said, affecting the founder's energy and bandwidth. It's hockey stick growth each time, because their head's back in the game, they're focusing on things that they should be focusing on, and they're not having that leaky bucket of energy and headspace escaping them constantly from dealing with this situation. So I've dived deep in this example into underperforming or disengaged team members, but if you could pick that up and apply to products that aren't working, or supplier relationships that aren't working, or systems that aren't working, you know, it's the same principle at the core of it all. And I thought something I think that really holds a lot of business owners up from making a decision and being the decisive entrepreneur that they would like to be is that they get so caught up in making the perfect decision. I will not make any decision until I know in every fiber of my being that this is the perfect decision to make. And I think it is, it's the perfection is the enemy of progress. And when we do get so caught up in that perfectionism around decision making, what generally happens is we don't make any decision, and then we continue this kind of slow drift towards not so great performance and experience in our businesses. So what I would love to invite you to consider is that if you are someone who tends to delay on making decisions, is to almost go into the decision saying, look, I'm not going to get this perfect. Maybe I'll get it 50% perfect. Maybe it'll be 60. Maybe if I'm having a really great decision-making day, I'll get it to 95%. But going into it expecting that you will not absolutely nail this decision 100%, because at least then it starts to get you a little bit of forward momentum. Any decision, within reason, obviously, any decision is better than sitting on a really crap situation and not moving forward. So I would really invite you to, as I said, give yourself the permission to not absolutely nail it with, you know, the 100% perfect decision, and just trust that at least with even an element of that decision that you make, you can move closer to a better outcome for you, for the business, for everyone involved as well. And also, some of us just take longer to make decisions. So I've talked a lot about DISC behavior profiling. If you are a D or an I, so the words differ, like D is like dominant or directing, I is influencing. If you're a D or an I, you tend to move faster. So you're like a faster paced DISC behavior style. So if you're a D or an I, chances are you will find it relatively easy to make a decision and give yourself the grace of, okay, even if I don't nail it, at least I'm making a decision. Whereas the S's and the C, so the kind of motto for S's is they're steady and C's are cautious, they tend to take longer to make a decision. But what helps will help all four of those behavior styles. So first of all, something that's really cool that I like to do is triangulation. So if I'm really stuck with a decision and I don't know what to do, I will go and I will speak to three people that I trust, whether it's in that area or people that know me very well or know my business really well, depending on whether it's a personal or business challenge that I'm working through. And I will say to them, look, this is the challenge that I have at the moment. If you were me, what would you do? And I will take on board each of their answers. And then it's called triangulation. It's the whole idea that a stool can't stand on two legs, but it can stand on three. So generally, if you have been pretty smart about the people that you have asked for input, you will generally find that in some way, the different recommendations that they give you will align, and it will enable you to make a more informed decision yourself. That is particularly good for the S's of us, amongst us, because S's, they require validation, they require a conversation with someone else before they make a decision, whether that decision is what to have for dinner tonight, or it's will I or won't I start this particular business that I'm thinking about. So triangulation is a really, really good tool to help you make decisions. The second is to bounce it off a coach or a mentor. I think we can think sometimes that coaches and mentors are there to plan the way forward and help you design what you're doing and so on. And that they will dictate to us what to do. Whereas actually, when coaching and mentoring is done well, it should feel very much like an organic co-creation process. So if you are struggling with the decision and you are working with a coach or a therapist or a mentor or whatever it might be, please do go and ask them for their input. It drives me bat shit crazy when I'm working with a mentee one-on-one, and let's say we have a call and then 2 weeks later we've got another call. I do a Thursday check-in with each of my one-on-one mentees. And maybe we get to the next call the following week and they say, oh, I was in this, you know, situation. I didn't know how to make a decision. I was trying to figure out what to do. And I'm like, why didn't you talk to me about it? This is what our SOS calls are for. Like, please know that I am here. And I think even with my mentees who know that I'm there to support them, we can still go down that path of, I've got this, I'll figure it out myself. I don't want to be a burden on anyone else. When actually I would love to be included and to support them in making that decision. And obviously it's not making the decision for them, but it's being that sounding board that is such a huge advantage to having these wise people. Completely calling myself wise there, aren't I? Thanks, Lorraine. Complimenting myself on my own podcast. But when we do have those great advisors around us, like, let's lean on them. So if you have, and I really do hope you do, have really great people that you can lean on, bounce your challenge off them and see what they say, whether it's three of them through triangulation or just one person that you trust. Something else I like to do, I actually did this with one of my friends. Her and I were coming up through the ranks. We started our businesses within a month of each other way back in 2012. And we were kind of our own mini bosses to each other. Like, we'd kind of support each other and, oh, so funny. Like, we'd have some kind of drama, either of us. And then we'd call the other one and say, can you come to the meeting room, please? Because we didn't want to cry in front of our teams. So the other one would go into the meeting room and like mop up the tears. And I remember my friend had a really shitty challenge with a supplier where they basically pulled a pin and weren't providing this particular service that she needed. And I said to her, like, what's the very worst that could happen here in this situation? And she said, well, I just have to go and build this function myself within my business. And then she just kind of looked at me and went, oh, that's what I should do. So her worst case scenario actually became her next strategic step. And that step turned out to be very, very profitable and very much a long-term offer that she had within her business. So it can be very scary to go to what's the worst that can happen if you make a decision in direction A or direction B, but it can actually be very enlightening as well. And often when I do go to the worst case scenario, it's really not that bad. And if I did need to, I could come back to what I was originally doing in the first place if I chose to. The other thing that really helps my decision making is a pros and cons list. So I have done these for everything. I know I've got a friend of mine who did it on whether or not she should have another baby. It's a really, really helpful tool just to kind of like the opposite of using your intuition, I guess. So it gets the facts down in black and white, and you can have a comparison of what are the great things if you do this and what are the not so great things, and can you deal with the not so great things. And then lastly, I'm completely contradicting my previous point. It's around leaning on our intuition. Like, if there's no other data available or your triangulation is actually confusing you more than clarifying things for you, it's running with your intuition and trusting that that will have your back moving forward. So I really hope that that helps you around the idea of decisiveness and how to make effective decisions. I've actually done a podcast episode on the past as well, so that might be one worth looking up. Now, the third skill that every business owner should be focusing on, but may not necessarily be, is building their resilience. If you're in business or you're considering going into business, you will know that business can be tough. The very best business stories, the very best business autobiographies are people who have gone through incredible adversity and still went on to have incredible success. Business really does require resilience, and hell knows, never more so than in the last 4 years, whether it was going through COVID or re-establishing businesses post-COVID, or for some of my mentees, their businesses boomed during COVID because they were e-commerce businesses. And that in its own right, and I know it sounds really inflammatory if you have a business that isn't making lots of money right now, but when you are making a lot of money, even in that creates problems because then you're trying to keep up with the demand. If you're a manufacturing business, you're trying to keep up with actually producing the product. If you're a services business, you're trying to frantically hire people in order to service the demand of what you have created. So resilience has never been as required as it is, I believe, in the last 4 years, particularly, well, definitely in my 12 years of business. This has by far been the most volatile and challenging environment to be starting and growing a business. And so many businesses close down as the owner can't hack the tough anymore. It just got too tough. And particularly for women who see their relationship suffering, they see their health suffering, They see their relationships with their kids suffering, their parenting style, their relationship with their partner suffering. It just it gets to a point where the scales tips in favor of, it would be easier if I wasn't doing this. And I've seen a number of women go down that path over my 12 years myself in business. It's really, really sad. So actively and proactively building our resilience is such a key part of the longevity of our businesses by building our own longevity, if that makes sense. Because if your wick burns out, your business isn't, you don't have a business anymore. A business runs off the energy of its founder. And if your mindset isn't there, your energy isn't there, your give a shit levels aren't there, the business is on, it's a slippery slope if you're in that position. And I don't want to freak you out, which is why I'm doing this episode. So how can we build our resilience? I really see resilience like a comfort zone. So you've all, I'm sure, seen that sketch of that meme online at some point, or someone's drawn it for you. I know I've drawn it for a number of my mentees over the years, where you've got a circle, you draw a circle, and that is your comfort zone. And everything you do that pushes you beyond your comfort zone expands that comfort zone. So every time you do something scary, or you do something for the first time, or you do something in a way that you're not used to doing it, it stretches that comfort zone. And as your comfort zone gets bigger, you almost have to try harder to find things that will stretch you. And if I think about the stuff that would keep me awake 5 years ago, God knows 10 years ago, the stuff that would keep me awake, that would have me agonizing all weekend about, now I wouldn't even give it a second thought. And I'm sure you're the same. You're the things that there's a really great concept of, if you're worrying about something, asking yourself, will I be worried about this in 5 minutes? Will I be worried about this in 5 days, in 5 weeks, in 5 months, in 5 years? And it's a really great way of almost like prioritizing how much you should be worrying about something. But genuinely, the more shit we experience, whether it's in life or it's in business, the more we have capacity for. And I know I've got one very dear friend and brilliant entrepreneur who actively, when he is hiring, he asks potential candidates, what's the toughest thing you've ever been through? Because he's looking for the people who have dealt with big things, not maybe just professionally, but also personally, because he can see in them, they've got that resilience muscle. They've tested that resilience muscle and they know that it's there. So that's one solace I find when I am going through something really tough, is that, okay, but at least my tolerance and my level of accommodation of shit stuff is increasing each time. Which is why, you know, when we go through a really difficult experience and we've been through the fire of it, we tend to come out the other side, forge more, you know, stronger, more beautiful, more skilled up, smarter, savvier, more experienced than we were before we went into that experience. And that's really, really tough to remember when you're in that fire. You know, when your fingers are being singed, it's hard to remember that there's something else on the other side of this. That said, it is so important for us to take active steps in the now to build our resilience tank. Because what can happen is something that Jack DeLosa, who's the founder of The Entourage, talked about, is that we can hit a point of resilience fatigue, where we've been dealing with shit or challenges or issues for so long that eventually our resilience just runs out. And I don't want that to happen to you. So what we need to think about is, okay, yes, we want to grow our resilience. We want to test ourselves by going and stretching ourselves in terms of dealing with more and more challenging things and taking bigger stretches so that we know that we can accommodate that. But at the same time, we want to be proactively building that resilience tank so that, you know, it's not if, it's when the shit hits the fan in some area of our lives or businesses, that we have got the resilience tank is full enough that we can deal with it and we can navigate it. So some ways that you can proactively build your resilience is, first of all, mindset practices. So whether that is meditation, EFT, so emotional freedom technique, is really good at just dealing with things in the moment so that they don't turn into baggage that you then carry around with you. So many beautiful holistic therapies, talk therapy. I love my monthly kinesiology session. Even things like acupuncture that just encourage you to lie still and chill have a huge impact on our mindsets. There's also, of course, exercise. So a huge mood booster. You don't need me to bang on about it again. I'm sure you've heard it lots. The incredible mood boosting qualities of exercise is an incredible way to build our resilience tank proactively. might sound a bit counterintuitive that the more we wear our bodies out, not wear our bodies out, but, you know, exercise and stretch our bodies and push them, that's actually building our physical strength. And Jackie, my kinesiologist, said this to me a couple of years ago. I started focusing on strength training. And I said, you know what, Jackie, it's really interesting. I'm focusing on lifting weights for the first time and I feel emotionally so much stronger. It was at around a time where I was just finishing up breastfeeding Wilder. For those of you who've experienced it, you're kind of coming out of that baby stage. You're just feeling a bit soft around the edges and a bit vulnerable. And making my body lift heavy things in a really safe, supervised way, obviously, was incredibly helpful in building my own mental and emotional strength as well. And Jackie said, yeah, that's actually what I say to my clients, that they're going through challenging emotional times. If they can't be emotionally strong, then focus on being physically strong, because that will have this beautiful carry-on, carryover effect onto their emotional strength as well. So exercise is a brilliant way to proactively build your resilience. Another way is to engage with coaches, engage in with mentors, engage in masterminds, anything like that where you feel like you're very held and supported and you have the support to work through challenges. You know, maybe it's not the big curveball challenge that temporarily knocks you off your feet, but just even dealing with those kind of smaller incremental challenges just means that you've almost like you've tried and tested your support team. So when you really need them, you know that they're there. And another huge one is to rest. So it's very, very difficult to be dealing with an emergency in your business or a major pivot or a personal crisis if you've just been running on a low tank for weeks, months, maybe even years, decades, maybe even for some of you listening. So making the time to fill your tank back up to rest just means that, I love this quote from Elizabeth Gilbert, the author, and she said that the most powerful person in a room is the most relaxed person, because they, many different reasons, but within the context of what you and I are talking about here with resilience, is it enables them to have that tank filled up so they can be proactive and deal with challenges as they come up. And I remember a mentee saying to me years ago on a retreat, she said, Lorraine, I've just had this realization. We were talking about energy management. And she said, I've realized that I've been trying to sprint a marathon. I've been going so hard for, I think at that point, it was 9 years for her in business. She had been sprinting the marathon. Whereas obviously if you are running a marathon, you pace yourself, you have your little gels, like you pace yourself through a marathon. So that is one sure way to really erode your resilience tank. So on the opposite is, what can you be doing to consistently build up that tank? So obviously I'm a huge fan of retreats. I'm hosting a retreat in Bali last week of May, which is almost sold out now, which is very exciting. So for me personally, retreats have been a huge way of having that real deep recharge of my resilience. And obviously then there's the little sips then in between being on retreat. So think about, for you, you know, how can you build more rest in order to consciously build that resilience tank? So they are the three skills that I would strongly suggest you, if you're not already, you consider focusing on and really amplifying and growing, as I said, giving these areas some love within your life and also your business. So the intuition, the decisiveness, and also proactively building that resilience. And when I create these episodes, they are so heavily leaning on my own personal experience of business over the last 12 years, but also the thousands of women who have so generously opened up their lives and businesses to me so that we can really sort through what is going on here. So if you would like a breakthrough all of your own, just remember that I'm hosting that free 1 hour business training in 2 weeks' time. There's three different sessions for you to choose from. And in that, I am pulling out the five biggest by far blocks that I've seen those thousands of women having in business that are really holding them back. And I'll be sharing what you can do about them. So remember to register for that. It's lorrainemurphy.com.au/TBB, that bold breakthrough. And I'll pop a link in the show notes to that one as well. Cannot wait to run those sessions. So sending lots of love. I really hope that today has been great food for thought and has sparked some ideas for you around what steps you can take in your life to start to put them into practice. And I will chat to you again next week. I loved having you join me for this week's episode. Please do connect with me on Instagram at Lorraine Murphy Mentor and visit my website lorrainemurphy.com.au for tons of free resources and my reading list of all my favorite books. It would mean the absolute world if you could subscribe and share episodes you love with those that you love. Thank you for listening.